Welcome to Because. I'm your host, Mark Zyla. This week, our guest is Nicholas Propes, educator and director of the Big River Brass Band. Nick has been a friend of mine since I moved to the Quad Cities, and we worked together a lot at the Quad City Symphony on multitudinous multimedia projects, and we've always had a great time. We love talking about music, and we love talking about how important music education is to our community and kind of our responsibility to pass down music making to the next generation. I hope you enjoy part one of our conversation. Nicholas Propes, welcome to Because.
Thanks. That was a very dramatic intro.
Absolutely. This has been years in the making.
Yeah, right.
Because you were around when this show started.
I was.
Here at WVIK. So.
Yeah.
Well, Nick, let's start with talking about your parents.
Oh,
that
goodness.
Is where you came from.
That is where I came from.
So let's describe your parents, you know, what they're kind of up to professionally and maybe transition into how they introduced you to music in your home.
Okay. So my parents are both retired. My mom is a retired accountant, and my dad is retired from the city of Ames, where he was the water plant supervisor for the city for years and years and years. They now live in the Quad Cities because that's what you do when grandkids are born.
Right.
You move to where the grandkids are. And they are probably the happiest and nicest and most talkative people you'll ever meet.
Right.
And I always say that I get my gift of gab from my parents because
right.
they will literally talk to anybody, anywhere, anytime for a long time.
What's fun about your parents is like when you're growing up and you have friends, like the parents get to know your friends.
Mm-hmm.
And that vibe's still going on.
Yeah.
Because, like, I know Phil and Teresa.
Yeah.
And it's funny to me because it's like, here's my friend from work.
They'll talk to anybody, anytime, and I love it.
Absolutely. So, what kind of music are they into or were they into? And
well, so that's an interesting part mm-hmm. of my story because music permeates my life.
Right. And we're here for interesting stories.
And we are, right. But they are not very musical. My mom does play a bit of piano,
mm-hmm.
But very much just personally for fun.
Right. And did that come from just her own personal interest, or did she have a parent kind of prodding in her history?
I think she took accordion lessons as a young kid.
Cool.
Back, you know, when like 1950s and that was a thing.
Right.
And it just came from that. But there is not really a familial history
okay.
of music
sure.
In my life. Mm-hmm. So, and then my dad always says that he can hardly play the radio.
Right.
Much less anything else. But I will say, just because they are not musically performance minded,
mm-hmm.
there was always a ton of music in our house.
Right.
One of my very first memories was being a young kid at home in Aurora, Colorado, suburb of Denver,
mm-hmm.
Where I was born, and playing records on my dad's record player.
Yeah.
And that's one of my very first memories of just like putting things on the record player. And
right.
I mean, I was little, so mm-hmm. I probably wasn't very gentle
right.
with the records and the mm-hmm. needles, but you know, like they apparently didn't care and
right.
just let me play records. And that was great. The other sort of like defining thought or moment of musicality in my family is that whenever there was a project to be completed, if it was painting a room or something
mm-hmm.
like that,
mm-hmm.
before anything else happened, the first decision was, what are we going to listen to? So
right.
it was go get the little boombox, pick out a couple of CDs. Oh yeah, what color are we painting the room? Oh yeah, it's in this can.
Right.
So music first, and that's how we get through all the chores, and then we paint.
Everything needs a soundtrack.
Everything needs a soundtrack. So that was how I grew up. Everything needed a soundtrack, mm-hmm. and that's, I think, where I got a lot of my musical interest from.
Cool. So aside from music, what was little Nick up to?
Oh.
I like to talk about, you know, this is a show about our musical lives, but I want to make sure everybody knows that we are complete people.
We are complete.
Just don't, I mean, maybe some of my guests like 24/7 music, but I don't know. What other things were part of your life at that point?
So I have always, since I can remember, played a musical instrument.
Mm-hmm.
Even though my parents were not musical, they did always have music in my hands in
right,
some
right.
way. Like, I started violin when I was three or four,
mm-hmm.
And piano, and then shortly after that, guitar. And then we moved to Ames, Iowa, from Denver, Colorado. Mm-hmm. And I think that was in third grade. Then in fourth grade, I picked up cello.
Okay.
In fifth grade, started on trombone.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've always had instruments and music that I have played, in my life. In addition to all of that stuff, my other big hobby and continues to this day was photography.
Oh, cool.
And I remember, shortly after we moved to Iowa, I joined 4-H because that's one of the things you do in Iowa.
Right. That sounds, from a non-Midwesterner, that sounds very Midwestern.
Yeah, it's very Midwestern. But one of the things that we did in 4-H was a photography,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if it was a badge or a photography, whatever.
Right.
And so I remember my dad sitting me down and teaching me how to use like the family camera.
Okay.
Right. And this was the camera that he bought to take pictures of me when I was a little baby.
Mm-hmm.
And here I am now in like third or fourth grade. And he's teaching me how to use that camera
mm-hmm.
that he took pictures of me as a baby. And then, you know, took these pictures, had them printed, developed, and entered them into the 4-H county or state fair, something like that.
Right.
And so that, in addition to music, was my main hobby, and starting there all the way through, I mean, to present day, as you know,
right.
photography is something that's really, really important to me.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I still have that camera body and camera lens,
mm-hmm.
and I actively use that camera lens still to this day because it's compatible with my current digital camera.
Mm-hmm.
I use that camera now. It's going on 43 years old.
Wow.
To this day, to take pictures with that lens.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's my other big passion in life is photography.
So to draw a somewhat of a correlation, but I want to tell this story.
Oh, okay. Hold on, everybody. Mark's got a story.
So my dad is a horn player,
uh-huh.
right? So it's the family business. And, you know, this passing down of a piece of photography equipment to you to spark that love. My dad recently found his first instrument that owned, like the first horn that he owned. And I guess the story was that, like, when he went off to college or whatever, like, he sold it to like a junior high school in Parkersburg. So my dad being retired now, the folks who are still teaching will call him up and say, hey, come out. I've got a horn player. Can you start this kid? Or, hey, I'd like to buy a new horn for my band department. So can you come test out these instruments or whatever? And so my dad goes to this school recently and he ends up looking at this instrument that was at the school currently. And he's like, something like goes off in his brain where he's mm-hmm. like, I think that this is like my, I think it was a Con 6D. So he's like, I think this is my Con 6D that I sold in like 1978 before I left for college or something like that. So anyway, he was able to work it out to where he traded a new instrument to this school for his old 6D. So now he has his old 6D. And when I go home next weekend, I'm going to get to play it. And he tells me every time that he buys a new instrument, he's like, you know, someday all of these will be yours. It's like this Lion King kind of thing. But anyway, there is a...
That's kind of funny because those things actually have value. Most parents are like, all that crap that's in the closet that you kept, that's all going to be yours one day. But like your hand-me-downs are actually going to be valuable. It's
really awesome, yes. But... there's something awesome, and it's like, if anybody gains anything out of this show other than just good stories, but it's like, if you're a parent, like, share something with your kid that matters, because, like, I'm so thankful that I have this connection to my dad. I mean, yes, it's this instrument, but, like, it's the amount of time we spent together doing this and, and all that kind of stuff. And I imagine that with your dad, you know, that for him to see you kind of taking on photography with this camera that was purchased to essentially document your life, and you're still documenting that life now, is something special on his end. And how special is it to you?
It's special to me too. Yeah.
Very good. Well, you have siblings in the house? I can't recall.
Yes, I have a younger sister. Okay. She's 2 years younger than me.
Nice. So this period, it seemed like you were in a little bit of musical exploration. Like, you pretty much touched every instrument I think we could think of in those early years. Was there some passing down to her and passing up of instruments, or was this just
not
you?
Really. This is just, she did try to play trumpet in band in whatever year we started in Ames school system, fifth grade, I want to say.
Right.
She did play trumpet, but it ended that year.
Right. So that didn't stick.
That did not stick. However, the trumpet that she played in fifth grade is still the trumpet that I play with students now. So that's awesome. It's like,
you are a reduce, reuse, recycle kind of guy.
That's right. Why do I need a new trumpet? I've got one right here.
So I want you to talk to me a little bit about that period of musical exploration. I think that's a thing that's fun is, as a music educator, you can kind of look back on that time period and maybe think about, you know, what that was all about. Was it that you were just trying to find the instrument that you really wanted to focus on, or were you just the kind of person who wanted to, like, be immersed in as many places musically as you could?
That's a good question. And that's honestly, I don't know. I think an interesting and unique part of my story, and I think a little bit of what makes me, I think I'm a pretty good teacher, but I think that one thing that kind of makes me a good teacher, this is going to sound a little bit weird to say, I suppose, but I was not a band kid, really.
Okay.
I played trombone in band fifth grade through 10th grade. I was in orchestra for a few years. I ended up dropping cello eventually, but then coming back to play in like the full orchestra as a brass player. And I took voice lessons and I was in choir. But I was not what you would call a band kid.
Okay.
Right. I spent a lot more of my free time in the dark room. In the school art program, and in the art rooms and doing the art stuff. And then outside of school, I didn't really practice my trombone. And when I switched from trombone to tuba, I didn't practice tuba.
Right.
I practiced guitar, electric guitar, bass, and played in rock bands with my friends. And why I think that is helpful to me as a student is because, or as a teacher, why I think that's helpful to me as a teacher, is because I think a lot of, I don't mean this to like say anything bad about teachers, but I think a lot of teachers, and one thing I try to express to students who want to become teachers or student teachers I've had over the years, like, you were probably way into band and you didn't realize that most of the kids in your band program were not way into it.
Right. And yeah, so you not have like you.
Right. You have these sense. Students who are coming out of music education programs and going to their first teaching job and like, yeah, every kid is going to try out for Allstate and every kid is going to do solo ensemble festival and every kid is going to, you know, come in here before school and hang out and come in after school and hang out.
Because those were the things that made me great.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Me and all my friends, we did, you know, all the band things. We played in the musical, we played in jazz band. But like, you know, looking back on that, that's like maybe a third of your band program, if you're super lucky, a quarter of your band program are those kids that are there for everything, right? And everybody else in the band program, man, they just want to make fun music with their friends.
Right.
You know, and that's what it is. And so I kind of have, I think, a unique perspective because I wasn't like a band kid,
right?
You know, who was like, first, as soon as the band room door is open, man, I'm going to go hang out in the band room.
Right.
Right. I wasn't that kid. And so I kind of have that perspective and an understanding and again, I don't mean to be disparaging, but like a little bit more of a reality check, right? We're like, hey, like most of these kids are just here to have fun making music with their friends.
Right.
They're not hardcore about it.
Yeah. I kind of planned for us to have a conversation about this later on in the episode, but we'll do it now since the door has been open, and that's great. What do you think the purpose of music education is in the public schools? Because I think that kind of, what I have to guess is your answer is going to be very much informed by your experience as a student of music, but also as a teacher who's not in his first handful of years of teaching. But of course, I always have my answers, but I always have answers to my own questions, but it's about you. But I'm kind of curious how that soup kind of plays out in your mind.
So I think there is the, I think there's a lot of different levels to the purpose of music education, right? And I think the one that is more outward facing and more public is that it gives students a thing to belong to.
Okay. Right?
Even though I kind of said, you know, that wasn't really my thing. Like I was the kid that skipped lunch to go develop film in the dark room, right?
Yep.
But there are other kids who take their lunch and eat in the band room, right? And that is their place where they feel comfortable. Mm-hmm. There are kids, and I can speak to this from experience, who literally only come to school because of their music ensembles.
Mm-hmm.
I've had those students before, right? And if they didn't have those music ensembles, they just wouldn't come to school.
Right.
I mean, I've had kids where I've had to like give them the reality check of like, if you don't get your grade point up, you're not going to be able to be in band anymore. You want to be in band. You've got to start doing your homework.
Right.
You've got to get these assignments done.
Right.
You know, and so there are kids who for them, that is really their place to belong.
Mm-hmm.
Right. We also talk a lot about how in a school day where most things are more analytical and, you know, it's like the answer is yes or no.
Right. There's
A or B.
Right. Black or white.
Right. Answers. Black or white. Music ensembles give students that time of their day to be creative, to be free, to be open, to be experimental. A lot of what I talk to students about now is that it's okay to make mistakes, right? Because in a lot of times, a mistake means you got a B instead of an A or a C or a D, right? I mean, you've made mistakes on your homework, and that's a bad thing.
Right.
Your idea is to get, you know, all the answers right.
Right. You have to execute that correctly.
Yeah. Right. But for us, it's okay to make mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody makes mistakes.
Right.
There has never been a performance in the history of music that has been mistake-free.
Right.
And I try to impress that upon students all the time. Like, look, you're going to make mistakes in this classroom, and that's okay because everybody makes mistakes as a musician.
100%.
Yeah. So there's that aspect to it as well. But then I think the one that is a little bit more of a slow burn that kids don't realize until after they're out of their, you know, school ensemble or whatever ensemble for amount of time, mm-hmm. is that it's also a place where they learn what in educational lingo is 21st century skills. All right. Right. That's our end lingo for the day.
Mm-hmm. And tell us what those 21st
century skills are. Yeah, so those 21st century skills, you know, are things like problem solving skills, mm-hmm. and how to work in a group or work as a part of a team, mm-hmm. For a common goal, how to realize that it's not just about you.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. That you've got, I mean, depending on the size of your program, 50, 60, 70 other people in your ensemble, mm-hmm. who you have to work together with for a common end goal.
Right.
Right. That you have a responsibility to. I talk with my students a lot about this as well. In your math class, man, if you get an F on your math test, the kid sitting next to you doesn't care. Mm-hmm. Affects their grade, not at all. Right?
Unless there's a curve.
And well, right,
you just,
right.
You just made things a whole lot better for everybody.
Yeah, but in band, man, if you miss your part, you know, if you haven't practiced your part or, you know, fill in the blank, you're really letting everybody else down too.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Because we all have to rely on each other and work together for this common goal. And so those sorts of educational lessons that then end up paying off in the workplace,
mm-hmm.
are really super important.
How much do you think about lifelong music making?
Oh, all the time. I mean, I, in my free time, right. when I'm not teaching music, mm-hmm. I'm to kids, I'm teaching music to adults.
Right.
Because I conduct the Big River Brass Band.
Right.
And, you know, one of the things that, I mean, in the big, one of the things I love about the Big River Brass Band is that it's literally students from like age 18 to 80 something.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the oldest member of the group
right.
is technically, mm-hmm. but
yeah.
I believe in their 80s.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a skill, a hobby, an activity that you can do for your entire life, you know,
right.
and not to bash sports because sports are great. But you can only play football for so long before
right.
you can't play football anymore.
Right.
You know, but you can play music until, I mean, until the end, as
right.
as that sounds.
For sure.
You know? But,
yeah. And I was thinking about this, last night, actually, as I was coming home from Big River Brass Band rehearsal, in which this particular rehearsal was a mixture of, you know, kind of refining some pieces we've already performed that sound
right.
good, and then some kind of exploring some new pieces that we'll present at the end of the season. And so therefore, like, on one hand, like, there's part of that where it's just like, oh, this is a really great time playing great music.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's this other element where we're kind of working and getting down into the weeds
right.
of certain things, which I've never really been the type that gets all that excited about rehearsal. So for me, that part of, if I had to put it on a spectrum, and this isn't you, this is every rehearsal,
mm-hmm. right.
where it's just like that part is less fun to me. But I came out of this rehearsal thinking about, you know, the ensemble sounds good. It plays concerts in the community, which is good for people to listen to, which is good. But the thing that I think that I forget as a radio host, as a community engagement director, as a musician, as a citizen of the Quad Cities, is that how great our music ensembles at convening people. And
right.
so there are folks in that ensemble, as I look around, that I don't know everybody super personally, but it's like, I imagine a lot of their social time, the catalyst to their social time is community music making.
Yeah.
And you see that with folks who both play in Big River Brass Band, and then they do Quad City Wind Ensemble,
right.
and they do this and they do that. They just love being around other people who love making music. They talk about music. They talk about non-music things.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's little inside jokes in the band
right.
and all this kind of stuff. And so to me, what engaging in that type of music making is, it like really again shows me that music is a fantastic way. It's not the only way, but it's a really good way to get people together, because you need a lot of people.
Right.
You can't have a brass band with four people.
Right.
And so much, I think, of, you know, we're both young men still who like, I think, individual things. Thanks. Like, we both like video games. Like,
oh, yeah.
You like doing things like video editing and
yes,
photography and stuff, yeah. Which is all like personal, individual work.
Editing those videos is a very lonely process.
Right. And so, but at the same time, it's like, you know, that's where you like to be, like, singularly creative. And yet, like, I think it's important for us to look at our lives as a plate, and for us to have social time and connection time with others within our community, and to base it around something we love. Like, everybody who listens to this, if you're not doing that, do it.
Yeah.
Like, if you love pickleball, go play pickleball with some strangers. Right. You know, I mean, like, this is what makes a vibrant life. And so, I mean, that community music making, I think, is so important to the Quad Cities. Yeah. But then you can even go down granularly, where it's like super important for me. It's super right. important for X, Y, and Z on a weekly basis. So talk to me a little bit about, like, how that feels to you as a person who, you know, has trained to become a conductor. There's the work involved of, like, learning the scores, but at the mm-hmm. end of the day, you are a person who is largely responsible for making sure that that musical experience is strong, but that there is place for connection between the musicians, and that it's not all about that perfect performance, or as close to perfect as we can get, because that doesn't seem to be ultimately the goal,
right?
Even though that's what we're doing,
right? Well, I think there's a line where you have to kind of push to a certain level of performance,
mm-hmm.
but then not push too hard.
Right.
You know, I mean, I think I hear people talk about old school conductors and old school teachers, you know, and that old school teacher would, like, sit next to a student and, like, stomp on their foot to help them feel the beat, right? Mm-hmm. You gotta feel the beat, kids, stomp right. on that foot, stomp right. on that foot. Or, you know, just being real...
cracking a note and then calling it out on the podium and stuff like that.
And you watch some of these rehearsal videos on YouTube of some of these old conductors, and they're just mean. Right. They're just mean,
like,
you know?
Everybody should Google, though, the Stokowski double bass. So just in YouTube, Stokowski.
You have no eyes. Is that the one? Like,
contrabassi! Yes. Anyway, it's fantastic. Yeah. But... also, I wasn't there. So.
Maybe it was really bad.
Maybe it
was. But who knows? But, like, right. So I think there has been a shift in conducting styles, mm-hmm. you know, where we're trying to get a good performance out of our musicians.
Right.
But at the same time, trying to be understanding of the fact that, like, especially in a community ensemble,
right?
People are here, like I said, for my students, right? People are here to make music with friends,
mm-hmm.
you know? And if you are, I think if you're respectful of that, then people will rise to the occasion.
Right.
Whereas if you are sort of that old school director who is just constantly beating down and complaining, you know, then mm-hmm. people are going to back off and not going to want to be in your ensembles,
right?
Not going to perform to the highest of their ability because they're always nervous about making a mistake,
mm-hmm.
you know. But I think, you know, just having that freedom to create and take a chance,
yeah.
And that's another one of those, I think, of those 21st century skills that we get from music is, you know, just the idea that if you get out there and take a chance and go for it. You know, go for that high note, mm-hmm. go for that hard rhythm, go for that whatever.
Right.
You might just get it.
Yeah. You know, it's the idea of, like, I always like to use these. It's like, try to play softer than you've ever played before.
Yeah.
And what's, you know, a teacher once told me, he was like, you know, you have to go for it, because that's what actually makes this interesting.
Yeah.
It's like what makes it uninteresting is having a computer play it for you perfectly, mm-hmm. right? You can even now put in crescendos, decrescendos. You can do tempo changes, which in the early parts of MIDI music was like 100% impossible. But what people actually love about what we do is that humans are doing it, and humans are putting themselves through this experience and challenging themselves right in front of you, like in front of an audience. So it's like, you know, next time I get to play Firebird, which is happening next spring, thankfully, that finale solo that the horn has, like, you're gonna have to lean forward to hear it. That's how soft I'm gonna play it, because I can. And maybe that day I can't, but boy, am I gonna give the music that effort. I'm gonna give it that emotional effort and physical effort. But yeah, to be able to support that as a conductor, I think also brings out new possibilities from your ensembles. And then you can kind of see in people's faces, you're like, oh, there's another level of this or that. So
speaking of 21st century skills, that right there is some goal setting that you just did.
Boom.
Hey.
There you are.
21st century.
Love it. Well, we do need to back up and get you to the point to where you can have all these really thoughtful answers to these questions. It's like last time you were just in a dark room in high school. Right. So, I mean, I'm sure you were thinking about a lot of things. But I want to hear the story about transitioning from, you know, your high school experience, and, you know, maybe share some stories from your high school experience that kind of turned you on to the idea that teaching was where you might head. And boy, I actually hope, because, you know, I feel like I know your story pretty well, because we literally shared an office together for 3 years, and like every day we picked our soundtrack, like the whole deal. We had record players, records everywhere. But I'm not exactly sure, like, how your educational path has weaved. So take me on that journey, bud.
Here we go. So this is something that I still, it's odd for me to talk about. So somewhere in my junior year.
Of high school,
I switched from trombone to tuba.
Okay.
I was a middle-of-the-road trombone player, and my band director said, hey, I'll put you in the top band if you'll switch to tuba.
Zero to hero.
Zero to hero, right. So, all right, fine. So I'll switch to tuba, whatever, I don't care. At the same time, I was, you know, when I'm not doing photography, I'm spending most of my time playing in various punk rock bands, metal bands. I had a little folk music trio that I played with, and literally carrying my guitar around with me everywhere that I went. And I thought that what I wanted to do with my life was to be a rock star.
Okay.
Or a photographer.
A rock star photographer.
A rock star photographer. And so when it came time to start looking for colleges, I mean, that's the kind of stuff that I was looking for.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at photography schools, looking at like popular music schools, looking at programs to be a studio musician, bass player kind of thing. But for whatever reason, I just didn't like, wasn't feeling those colleges. You know, we're looking in like Chicago and Minneapolis at some schools there, and just, it wasn't, I don't know. I was undecided. I wasn't like, wasn't quite feeling it. I was like, is this really, I don't know.
And I'm trying to like remember at that time, because I think we've connected as individuals because our stories are oddly similar in a lot of senses. And I remember at that same time you're talking about, and it might have been around the same year, is, you know, I was playing bass in an indie rock band and booking my own shows and actually made money doing that. Like, not a lot of money, but to a high school kid, if you walk away with $100 profit on a show, you're like, whoa, this is awesome. I can buy a lot of hot dogs at the diner with this. But like music business was something I was extremely excited about. But at that time, music business programs were so new that it was really hard for schools to tell a success story.
Right.
Where it's like, you know, this is a degree program, blah, blah, blah. And when you graduate, you can do all of these things. And it's like, I remember these, like, and I can imagine maybe part of it is this, like, yeah, come learn how to be a rock star. Okay, well, now, exactly. And it's really hard for them to answer that question, and probably be really hard for them to answer that question even now.
Yeah,
but true. But anyway, you know, like the programs at that point were really well-intentioned, and we're kind of seeing that there needed to be educational structures for something other than classical performance, jazz performance, and teaching. But anyway, so.
So my thought was, I mean, I wanted to be a rock star, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was serious about it.
Right.
Like, let's have practices, you know, it's a snow day, awesome. Let's all get together at the drummer's house and practice, right?
Right.
And my friends are noodling around on guitar or whatever. Mm-hmm. Okay, no, hey guys, let's focus and let's actually like rehearse this song. Okay,
right.
Let's rehearse this song.
So you start running rehearsals.
Yeah. And then you know, they're off on tangents and messing around on guitar and, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Let me try to play your drums. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, no, hey, let's come back and let's play this.
You
song.
Play drums.
And so all my, I shouldn't say all, a lot of my friends were going to the University of Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, well, all right, let's go to the University of Iowa. It's fine. I'll go to the School of Music. I'll find a bunch of other people who are really into music.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that'll be the people that are like into music with me.
Yeah.
You know,
and you kind of see how it goes from there.
Right.
Figure it out.
What I didn't know is that, they were into a way different kind of music than I was into,
you know?
Uh-huh. And so I show up to college and I've got like bleached white hair.
Nice.
And just wearing the most outrageous clothing.
Mm-hmm.
Everything, you know, bought at Goodwill for shock factor.
Right.
If it didn't look shocking, I wasn't going to buy it.
The most ironic t-shirts you could get your hands on.
Exactly. Yeah. And ears pierced. And necklaces and rings and the whole nine yards,
mm-hmm.
right? And like I was a fish out of water. and then on top of that, I'd only been playing tuba for 2 years.
Oh, wow.
Because I switched my junior year of high school.
Mm-hmm.
And looking back on it now and knowing what I know now compared to what I knew then was like nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Like I probably had no business being a music major.
Okay.
And no business getting accepted into the School of Music. And if it wasn't for the fact that I switched to tuba, and tuba is not traditionally a very competitive studio.
Right.
There's no way in heck I would have gotten into the trumpet studio or the mm-hmm. trombone studio or the violin studio or the piano studio.
Right.
With the amount of skill that I had on tuba
at that point.
You know? Yeah.
Had you been to Iowa City before?
Not really.
Okay.
Not that I can think of.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of like through my West Virginia experience, like literally everything goes through WVU at some point.
Right.
So it's like, it's odd for people to not have at least two or three events that occur in Morgantown.
Well, see, I grew up in Ames,
right,
Iowa,
which has its own
University. Iowa State University. So
right.
Going to Iowa
Iowa State University.
Yeah, the Iowa State. So going to Iowa was, it was the
countercultural
enemy school
there too.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
So now, you've described that, you know, you're this fish out of water.
Right.
You said that you probably had no business being there at that point. What got you to the point where you had some business at the school. Like, who were the people behind that? And you know, what did that look like?
Well, my tuba professor was pretty inspirational.
Mm-hmm. Who is that?
Bob Yates.
Yeah.
Professor Yates. Because he was himself a very liberal-minded mm-hmm. person.
Yeah.
And so we would have a lot of, we had a lot of connection over sort of philosophies and, mm-hmm. and politics and things like that.
Right.
But then I think the other person that had a pretty big influence on my life there was the director of bands, Dr. Welch.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't know if we were never like close the way that like some students, you know, right. were with him.
Always in the office.
Right. Always
out.
In the office and always
getting invited
out.
To the wedding.
Right. Right. Like that. Right. Yeah. Exactly.
I saw a friend of mine had the director of bands as a groom's person.
Oh, really?
And I was like, come on, people.
But he was.
<I'm> sorry.
He was somebody they always wanted to impress.
Mm-hmm.
You know? There was a rumor, and I don't know how true this is, but somebody told me early on that he didn't like me.
Okay.
Because I looked weird.
Right.
Right.
All right.
And so then it was like, well, then I gotta, you know, impress this guy now.
Mm-hmm.
And just like a lot of pressure to be not an embarrassment, I
see.
Suppose.
All right.
Maybe it was my sophomore year of college. They had the band extravaganza, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where the marching band comes out and does like a bunch of their tunes, but in a more of a concert setting. And back in the day, it used
right.
to be in Hancher.
Mm-hmm.
And there were all kinds of skits that were various levels of appropriateness and silliness and goofiness.
Right.
And in one of them, I played a little ditty on sousaphone while the rest of the sousaphones acted out some mm-hmm. silly skit. And supposedly, somebody said, oh, you know, Dr. Welch actually thought you sounded really good on that little sousaphone skit.
All right.
Oh, well, okay. There you go. All right. Now we're making some progress.
I sound right? good.
Yeah. I went from being this weird kid. I was at that point still had all kinds of
You're
manners
still weird,
of colors
Nick.
Of hair. Oh, thank you.
One might not look by your appearance, but at this current state, but weird is good.
At that point, I think I had pink hair at that point.
Okay.
But yeah, so then it was like, oh, okay. So I've gone from the weird kid to at least like, he says that I sound good.
The weird kid who sounds good.
Yeah, the weird right. kid who sounds good. And so it's like, you know, one of the things that I struggle with still, like, is you go to like teacher conventions and stuff like that. And the keynote speaker without fail always says, everybody here had that one teacher that really inspired them. And maybe it was your kindergarten teacher, or maybe it was your high school English teacher. Mm-hmm. Think back to that teacher. And what did you like about them? And I'm like, yeah, you know, like, I don't really have that.
Okay.
Experience, you mm-hmm. know, like I don't, maybe my high school art teacher,
right.
maybe,
yeah,
but I really didn't have a teacher that I really solidly connected with.
Okay.
In school,
mm-hmm.
you know, and again, like Dr. Welch is somebody to, we weren't tight, you know,
right.
But so even Dr. Welch, I, you know, if I was to like close my eyes and say like, who's that teacher?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Right.
I'm hard pressed to find that person, but,
yeah, yeah.
but he might be the closest thing just yeah. because I felt the need to like impress and not be a total fool.
Yeah. Well, I think that, whether people put it this way or not, like in the music world, it is important for one to be aware of a standard.
Yeah.
And whether or not it is, you know, there is this, you know, universal standard for performance. But there's also along the way standards of like, you know, a sixth grader should be able to do this and you know, and right. those types of things. But, you know, once you get beyond these very specific like task things, like to have somebody say, and, you know, it doesn't feel good. It never felt good for yeah. me, but like, this is not good enough.
Right.
And the way the student reacts to that, I think is important because what we do as performers, and I mean, I suppose whether we like it or not, even in an educational setting, we do so much of what we do in public, in front of other people. Mm-hmm. And so whether or not it's, and you know, this is my opportunity again to, I think I was supportive to parents earlier, but like, I hear a lot of parents of elementary aged students hem and haw and kind of roll their eyes over the quality of performances at right. the elementary level or the quality of performance at the junior high level or the quality of performance at the high school level. And it seems to me that there's just this like, oh, they sound so bad. They sound so bad. And then in high school, they're like, oh, wow, they sound great. I'm telling you, you do not have the option to talk like that around your kid.
Yeah.
I mean, if you want to ruin your kid, do that.
Right.
Because all people want, and this will kind of tie us back to the other end of the spectrum in relation to your first question, is that we do need that person who says, here's the standard. But we also need cheerleaders. We need cheerleaders yeah. from minute one.
Yeah.
And for a student to not expect that from their family is really, really sad. And I understand. I see the fam. I hear it. I see it. They laugh. They chuckle. They talk. Like your other kids are around.
Yeah.
Like they sound great all the time because they're doing it.
Right.
And there's, I don't know, man, I like, there's no soapbox I get on more often than just your attitude about your student's development. Yeah. And so with you, from an outsider's perspective, you had the standard bearer, which is Director Bantz.
Right.
But you also had a cheerleader, which is, you know, that safe tuba studio that you could go back to, yeah. which is Bob Yates, who you yeah. get to still see.
I do see regularly.
And so, like, for that, like, you did have, I think, both ends of that spectrum yeah. to a certain extent. And maybe that perfect teacher is not a real entity, but it is the mixture of those two that That's could have point. Have put that together. Yeah. Because I don't know Nick Propes to not understand standard.
Right.
You know, like, I mean, you evaluate, we talk what's good, what's bad, but, you know, anyway, so that's my reaction to your story. And anyway.
Can we take a quick back to 21st century skills?
This is your story.
Because what you are describing, I think, is another one of the possibly most important skills that somebody can learn from playing a musical instrument is the sort of slow burn of it.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. Like success does not happen overnight. You right. have to put in the work mm-hmm. or you're not going to be successful. And I think today in this era, it's even more important because literally we live in a time of instant gratification where everything is at your fingertips all the time, where mm-hmm. video games are programmed to get easier if you're struggling at something, mm-hmm. right? You're struggling on a level on your video game. The video game will make it easier for you so that you don't quit playing that game.
Yep.
Right?
Right.
And so there are all these mind hacks that are making our world easy. And there is no quick, easy fix to learning to play an instrument.
Right.
And I think that's literally one of the most important things mm-hmm. that a student gets out of music education in schools.
100%.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry.
Well, we have talked about two of your professors at University of Iowa, but I want to dig into this marching band experience because I know goodness. For a fact that there are folks who hopefully will listen to this who were in that band with you. And I think that
the most important one.
Well, there's that, but I think there's also the Peterson family.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And so, and I'm going to have you answer it through the lens of a person who hated marching band. So much good in your life has come out of that experience. And so, you know, you don't have to sell me on marching band, but it's like, and the reason I didn't like it was, you know, had nothing to do with anything about it. Right. It's like, so maybe the answer is going to be, I didn't like it because I didn't find what you found. But anyway, talk to me about your marching band experience. And like, I don't know, because you've talked about it before and it seems to be something that was cool.
I am not a hardcore marching band person, mm-hmm. right? I mean, there are people who eat, breathe, right. live,
sleep. They watch the videos on YouTube.
Yeah. Marching band. Mm-hmm. For me, marching band was another way to meet people.
Okay.
And I mean, like, to a certain degree, I also had to be in the marching band as a music education major.
Right.
Right. But it was a way to meet people. And literally, you go in for marching band camp, I think it was like the week before school starts, and boom, instant friends.
Yeah.
Right. One of them who has become a very long-time friend. Mm-hmm. She's my wife, by the way. Yay.
So you met
today
her.
Is our anniversary.
Oh.
Yeah.
Happy anniversary. So did you guys meet before college even started?
I mean, she was in the sousaphone section.
Right.
I was in the sousaphone section. So we met, you know, at marching band camp.
Cool.
And we were friends first, hanging out, walking to rehearsal, mm-hmm. going to parties, and then it just developed.
Blossomed. Well, that's so cool, man. So talk to me about, you know, some of those experiences that bonded the two of you, but also you have other friends that you made there as well.
Right.
Because I think that marching band is a unique experience.
Well, it's a huge time commitment.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. I mean, you spend, now I don't know, this was 20 something years ago. So I don't know what it's like anymore, but mm-hmm. back in my day,
right,
we had 2 hours of rehearsal every day, plus an extra music rehearsal on Wednesday nights. So Wednesdays were 4 hours of rehearsal, marching and then music.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously all day Saturday at the football games.
Right.
You know, so we would go to the football games. If it was an 11 o'clock start, I think the sousaphones had to get there at like 5 or 6 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
To like unload trailer.
Allegro molto time.
Man. Yeah, right. Yeah. So we spent just exorbitant amounts of time mm-hmm. with each other.
Right.
You know, and so, you know, bonding over our music and the football games and that whole team spirit, mm-hmm. you know, and again, it all goes back to 21st century skills, working together to do a thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. And so when we're all kind of pulling for the same end product, you know, it connects people.
Right.
And marching band isn't the only way to do that. You know, there are lots of ways to do that. But it was the one that worked for me
for sure.
My freshman, sophomore years of college. So, so just, you know, getting time to spend with those people and spending a lot of time with those people.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, like you said, I met a bunch of people, not just my wife. She was the most important one, obviously.
Right. Right.
But meeting some good friends, that I still connect with regularly. One of them, Andy Peterson in the brass band.
Mm-hmm.
We were in college together and played in the marching band, but played also in a tuba euphonium quartet together all through college.
Oh, that's awesome.
Things like that, you know. So, and then I have other friends who are teachers around the state, but also.
Mm-hmm. And he met his wife in marching band too,
yeah.
right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Gosh, University of Iowa marching
Boom.
Band. It's like
where families
the
start.
Dating app before the dating app.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But I will say, I mean, like I said, you know, marching band is an insane amount of time.
Yeah.
So by the end of my sophomore year, I was like, I need to reclaim my time.
Yeah.
And I didn't do it after my sophomore year. But those 2 years were, you know, they were great. They were a lot of fun, a lot of good memories, not so much great football in that era.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah, a lot of losses when we were in the Hawkeye marching band. But it's still like it instilled in me a love of Hawkeye football. Like I wouldn't love Hawkeye football as much as I do if it wasn't for the Hawkeye marching band.
Yeah, well, that is a great ode to marching band, I would say. And for me, it really is. I think that the essence of my angst is that as an individual, I desire to be a part of every group.
Mm.
And that was just like a group that I didn't have time for.
Yeah.
Because like I was very, very focused on needing, you know, 6 hours of practice time a day,
right,
and playing in all the concert ensembles I could get into.
Right.
But that social aspect of things, like I would go to marching band parties and it would be weird because I'm not of them.
That's right.
But, you know, I got to reap the benefits of the parties either way, I suppose.
Because is produced by Mark Zyla and Jaron Michel in the studios of WVIK Quad Cities NPR. Thank you for listening to this episode. Because I read Because by Mo Willems, illustrated by Amber Wren, I wanted to learn the becauses of people I admire. Do me a favor and thank someone in your own Because story, and join us next time on Because.